is the Best of the Chain Crew podcast, powered by the California Youth Football Alliance. Visit their website at cayfa.org for more information.
So I want to roll the clock back to the Friday after the Super Bowl last year. It was one of the best weeks of my life because I'm an Eagles fan, and the Eagles actually won the Super Bowl, first one ever. And all of that came to a little bit of a screeching halt on the Friday afterwards, where Assemblymember McCarty posted what's called a spot bill that announced that he wanted to ban youth tackle football. 2 weeks or so later, about 30 of us got on a phone call organized by Chris Four out of the Los Angeles area. We talked about what are we going to do. And at the end of that call, Chris asked for volunteers, and five of us raised our hands. The three of us and our colleagues, Jason Ingman and Todd Bloomstein. And then we launched into an 11-week roller coaster ride. We had no idea what we were in for. Our name kind of emerged as the Save Youth Football California Coalition. And God, what the experience was remarkable. I mean, it was like this every Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday night. We were on video calls like this and just talking about what are we going to do next? How are we going to defeat this? What's our strategy? You know, that kind of went its course. There's been a lot of, you know, press coverage on that. End of April, the week before the bill was scheduled to go to hearing, Assemblymember McCarty pulled the bill, and we all kind of had a big exhale, big sigh of relief, because we thought that logic, reasoning prevailed. So I recall that like yesterday, guys. The three of us got on a call and we were like, what are we going to do? And we said, well, you know what? It's been 11 weeks of 30 hours a week. Let's get some time back for our families. Let's reconvene in 45, 60 days or so. And sometime around the end of June, early July, we kind of got together. And the three of us, you know, Steve, Ron, and myself, and we started talking about, so what's next? We know that Assemblymember McCarty said he was going to bring the bill back. We also appreciated that this is a journey. This isn't like a one and done. This isn't just a one-time transaction. This topic was not going to go away. It was only going to be brought back in a different form or a different shape. And so, you know, I recall three of us engaged in some really, you know, critical conversations over that summer. Talked about, you know, what do we want to do as an organization? Should we get more formal? Should we organize ourselves? You know, the coalition was awesome. There were some pros and cons. You know, it was great because it was grassroots. You know, if we become an organization, do we lose the grassroots? And, you know, through that, we decided that we wanted to definitely organize so we get the benefits of that structure first. And secondly, we wanted to maintain our purpose and mission orientation. And so we officially became a 501c3 in California in September of 2018. And then in October, Assemblymember Cooper knocked on our door and said, hey, you know, are you guys interested in helping me author a bill that would put some safety standards in place for youth tackle football in the state of California? And it was perfect because we were on that path. He was such a supporter of ours in the rallies. You guys recall the rallies back in Sacramento?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, he gave a remarkable speech. You can find it on YouTube. He was such a supporter. And we had a version of the bill that we were working back, you know, in the April, May timeframe of 2018. And so that was published on December 2nd. We agreed our mission, we put our values out there and our goals, and we're up and running.
The landscape of youth tackle football today versus, say, 20, 30 years ago when I first got into this, right? We talk about 79 years of walking sidelines. It feels like 179 in football years. It's important for people to understand the evolution of the game, and that's really a cornerstone of what we're doing as well.
Ron, I don't think there's anyone who can speak to that better than you. I mean, when you were playing, didn't they wear leather helmets?
Actually, we had to save up for leather helmets. They were the next year, Joe, but thank you for pointing that out.
Wait a minute. You had to save up for leather helmets? Did you just
absolutely, sir. That was a luxury back then. 133 in football years. Thank you for pointing that out, Joe.
Well, let's be careful now. We're making ourselves sound really, really old, like a bunch of old guys here, right? And we're not. We're just experienced, right?
I'm going to put that in the wise, not old category, but thank you for pointing that out.
The best of the Chain Crew.
But unfortunately, there's a lot of sports that contact base, for example, that you just don't hear anything about. You don't hear anything about girls soccer. You don't hear anything about boxing or MMA. There always seems to be a perpetual lock on football from the NFL all the way down.
If youth football is so bad and, you know, we need to end it for whatever age group, because there's a lot of different opinions on what age that should be. Where do they think these kids are going to go? Where do you honestly think that these kids are going to go if they're not playing tackle football? Do you think they're all going to play tennis? I don't think so. You're going to have boxing numbers go up. You're going to have rugby numbers go up. You're going to have MMA numbers, dirt bike riding, whatever it is. I see this hot topic on Twitter a lot, and these debates going on about where the kids are going to go and things like that.
Sure.
That's why I always wonder, you know, the attack that the sport has right now on it. What do people really believe these kids are going to do if they don't play tackle football to get that physical kind of rough housing thing that, you know, a lot of kids like to do?
This is the Chain Crew Podcast, powered by the California Youth Football Alliance. Now back to the guys on the Chain Crew Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Chain Crew Podcast. Steve Famiano, along with Ron White. A very hot topic that is in the media is youth football insurance. And today, we're going to go right to the source and get hopefully some detailed information for you in regards to the state of youth football and the state of insurance and how that all relates together. And our guest joining us right now is the president of Sadler & Company, Mr. John Sadler. John, how are you today?
Doing great. Thank you.
Do you see brain injury as the number one concern of insurance carriers when it comes to youth football?
With the publicity from USA Gymnastics and the Larry Nassar incidents over sex abuse, the carriers have actually put brain injury on the back burner to child abuse. We also have the new federal Safe Sport Act, which has upped the risk management requirements for preventing child abuse. And most organizations right now are scrambling to come up with their documented programs to be in compliance with the Safe Sport Act. But surprisingly, on our book of youth tackle football business, we're just not seeing many claims from either brain injury or child abuse. What we're seeing would be your traditional claims, routine spectator slips, strips, and falls, and player injuries other than brain injury. I can tell you that, believe it or not, two of our larger claims have actually been falls off of parade floats. Now, that just goes to show you never know where the claims are going to come from. And many of our larger claims come from outside playing the sport itself. And that's true across all sports.
This is the best of the Chain Crew Podcast.
What has changed to make Massachusetts think it needs to be done a year later when five states tried to ban it last year and it didn't happen? There's no new science. There's no new information.
Steve, this one, I thought about it some more, and I'll be honest with you. Like, I look in the mirror and I'm a little disappointed that I and we didn't anticipate this, right? Here's what I think happened. Nowinski came out here to California and tried to push some things around in unfamiliar territory in our backyard. And, we did what we needed to do to defend our rights and save our sport. And now he went into his backyard and, you know, he's looking at, all right, I'm going to get to my home turf. And it's clear to me, well, I don't want to get ahead of myself here because I don't like being a guy who makes predictions at all. But given what I'm seeing, the fact that the bill within three business days the fact that it moved that quickly. The USA Today articles that came out today, I think the opposition's got a little bit of a plan that they're working, more so than maybe a better plan than what they've had in the past. And, I think we should continue. I was talking to Paul from the Massachusetts team today, and I think we should continue to anticipate moves from the opposition that are a little more coordinated than I think what we experienced last year. So we just have to up our game a bit.
You said Nowinski. For those who may not know, because I'm starting to figure this out just by watching some of the activity in the Save Youth Football Massachusetts Facebook group, and this happened to us in California, a lot of people don't know that name. So for those who don't know who Chris Nowinski is, he's the co-founder and CEO of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, which works in conjunction with Boston University CTE. And he is, at this moment, there's another individual too, that's a advocate for removing tackle football. But I would say at this moment, he is enemy number one in pushing this. He's the one behind all these state bans. He might want to, you know, say that he's not and tries to lay low and all this other stuff, but he is the guy that is pushing this agenda. And Ron, as far as Nowinski and that whole scenario of where we're at in this, what's your take on what the ultimate end goal is for him?
Pretty simple, right? And I'm going to use a phrase from his former line of work. He wants to come off the top rope and end tackle football, right?
All we want is to make the sport safer. And I don't understand why some of these people, like a Chris Nowinski, he's clearly intelligent. This is not a matter of intellectual capacity. For some reason, he doesn't want to work with us when we're doing it. We've been doing it for years. It's like, welcome to the party of making youth tackle football safer. You know, come on in, have a seat, and let's roll up our sleeves and do something together. Let's not fight each other.
I guess you could say wishful thinking in some regards, right? Because you can only reach out to people so many times and they keep telling you no, right? And then it basically just tells you everything you need to know about those individuals. You had just said earlier that you didn't basically want to make a promise, right? Or make some prediction on anything. Well, Nowinski's out there making predictions, and he made a prediction in USA Today in an article that just came out. And basically he said, I would say based on what I know today, that it's guaranteed to happen in regards to youth football being banned, and that it would happen within the next 5 years. He's not thinking it's going to be banned now either. That's very telling to me. He's right. Thinking that he's still got more work to do. If you're so sure, and this is where I'm at in this, guys, if Chris Nowinski is so sure today that youth tackle football is bad for kids 14 and under, why would he go out in public and make a statement that it could be in the next 5 years? If it's that much of a national crisis that we have legislators in six states now trying to ban youth tackle football, why are you giving yourself 5 years? Doesn't gel with me.
This is the best of the Chain Crew.
I predict that people all across this country really are interested in sorting out fact from fiction are going to stand up in the football community, just like they're doing in Massachusetts, just like we did in California. And I think they're going to stand up for the sport and all the people it serves. That's my prediction. And I feel pretty good about that.
And I will say to everybody in Massachusetts, I never, ever thought that I would be supportive of a Patriot fan. I just want to let you guys know that.
You've gone too far now, Steve.
I just lost
me at the Patriot fan part.
I just got to tell you guys, this has been incredible for all of us in just about a week's time, you know, since this Massachusetts ban bill was introduced. Some of the people that we've met from Massachusetts who are Patriots fans, but they're really great people. But I honestly tell you, I never thought I would feel this much passion for a Patriots fan, which I think everybody in Massachusetts is a gosh darn Patriots fan. And not only that,
Steve, the Patriots win. The Patriots win, and they're going to win.
Oh, they're used to that.
Right?
Exactly.
No, they're used to it.
They're going to win for sure. Another big news story out of youth football is Pop Warner's decision to basically eliminate the three-point stance for certain divisions in their organization. And that is a very, very hot topic among youth football coaches and parents, and social media is on fire with this topic. And so we're going to kind of have a little maybe debate here about this, because I don't know if we're all on the same page with that decision. Joe, you are in Pop Warner with your organization. So I think it's best to start with you and see what you think of that decision.
Pop Warner signaled this a year or two ago. They made some forward leading statements around, and I don't know if it was on their website or not, but there was just, you know, there were some comments that I think they were looking at 2020, 2021, moving to a 2-point stance at their younger levels, that they were evaluating that. So for me, I wasn't terribly surprised by it. I had seen it on the radar, so to speak. So the movement in that direction, I can see the value in that within my organization. So I, you know, I got a Pop One organization here, 100 football players, maybe 25 cheerleaders. So I can see the possibility. I like that direction. What I don't like about it is that it feels like a Hail Mary pass. It feels like we're grabbing at straws to create the perception that things are becoming safer. And I don't need to create a perception. You know, my backyard is safer now than it ever has been.
I was never affiliated with Pop Warner, AYF, or any of the national organizations. I was always involved with independent conferences and leagues.
I might be independent after this podcast, Steve.
we'll make room for you.
We'll see if my email or my phone rings tomorrow and Pop Warner says, hey, what are you guys saying?
The best of the Chain Crew.
On the line with us right now is our special guest today. And more than just a special guest, he's actually become a really good friend of ours and a working colleague in regards to youth football. And that's Dr. Peter Cummings. Peter, how are you today?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Now, Peter, I'm going to ask you kind of some medical stuff here that it's been on the top of my mind for a long time now, and trying to get some clarification on what these terms mean and how they relate, because this is part of what I call the narrative against the sport of youth football and football in general.
All right. I thought you were going to get real personal on me and show me a rash or something.
That's later in the show. Yeah, we both are going to do that. That's later in the show. I'm itching right now.
Okay. Let me tell you what. My doctor said this. What do you think? You
know? Well, wait a minute now. Are you diagnosed? I mean, are you certified to diagnose a rash? Let's make.
Hey, I am a fully licensed physician. If I wanted to, I could put you on my kitchen table and take out your appendix.
That's good to know. That's one for the whole family. I appreciate that.
Oh, man, that's great. I mean, if we're a parent that wants to sign our kids up for football, youth football, we would say, who would you go to? You're going to believe the coach. You're going to believe the doctor. For you, it's more of, you are in the field of the brain and you are a youth football coach also. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. So you have the unique aspect of being able to tell that story.
Yeah. How I open some of the talks I give about this is the only person I know of in this conversation. And I use that term loosely because there's not a lot of conversation happening here, which is the problem. I don't know anybody else who's a forensic pathologist, who's done, you know, thousands of autopsies and cut thousands of brains, who understands the complexities of the brain and trauma, who's also, you know, a neuropathologist who has taken the time to learn about football, coach football, both flag football and tackle football, has a child that plays the sport. I touch every area of that. And the interesting thing about those intersections of parent, coach, and neurotrauma expert is that I never intended really to be a football dad or a football coach. I say that my son plays football because I reached these decisions. I didn't reach these decisions because my son plays football.
This is the best of the Chain Crew podcast.
Nobody wants their children injured. Nobody wants to injure the children that they coach. I mean, I love these kids. You know, we go trick-or-treating together. We have, these are like a family. And I don't want any of these children hurt. And I even on the other team, when somebody turns an ankle or something in a game, it's upsetting because I know these kids love this game and they love to play it.
So here's an interesting question. I don't know if you've ever been asked this, but since you brought it up, I'm going to ask you.
Oh God.
When you go trick or treating, what's your costume?
Last year I wasn't anything because I got stuck in the Red Sox World Series parade traffic and I was late getting home. The year before that I was Wolverine.
I wasn't expecting that on the show today, but that is good information. Just in case I need a Wolverine lookalike someday.
The Hugh Jackman Wolverine.
The Hugh Jackman, yeah, okay.
Gotcha. I wasn't wearing that tidy yellow thing.
Thanks for the clarification. I have a better image now. I don't know if that's ever going to leave my head, but I have it.
And I sit down, I go, oh my gosh, look at that picture. And Ron says, by the way, Dallas Cowboys fan. Ron says, I'm a Sixers fan.
What?
Steve, you had to pick me up off the floor. You've been holding out on me. You're a Sixers fan?
Sixer fan through and through. I didn't want to let that out, but yes, that is absolutely true and a great classic photo. And the food was tremendous. Even though, honestly, I didn't want to admit that, being in that Philly environment as a Cowboy fan, it was painful. It was painful, only offset by that classic choking image when Eastern basketball was king.
So there's a redeeming factor there with Ron, even though he's a Cowboys fan. You know, we don't hold that against him because he's a Sixers fan.
I just want to say this, Steve. I got to be honest with all the Philadelphia Eagle paraphernalia in there. When I left that room, for some reason, I felt like maybe I couldn't catch a football or I was much slower. Like those things may have rubbed off on me. So it's going to take me a while to get that Philly feeling off of me, if you will.
Well, this is interesting, though. This is something new that I've learned about you, Ron. I mean, for a guy that is very anti-Eagle to be very pro 76ers.
Cowboy fan, basketball, Sixer fan. And then I threw this one in for a bonus.
Wait. Before you say it, Ron. Steve, when he said he's really confused, trust me, when he lays this next favorite team down, you're going to be even more. It's so confusing. I don't get it. I was like, what? You like who?
It makes no sense except for me. And I am a New York Mets fan. Figure that out. I don't quite understand it. I think my parents are confused too. But I had to let it out, Steve.
You know what? This is actually a lot more interesting than flag versus tackle, to be honest with you.
Joe likes me more now, even though he doesn't want to admit it.
I don't know, man. When you said the Mets,
it was good stuff.
The Mets are like, oh my, like you couldn't pick three teams that are like, you know, three cities that are more opposed to each other on the, you know, I mean, Dallas, Philly, New York. What other three cities are like more anti each other, right? I mean, but Ron's the common thread running through all of them, though. He's got a team in every single one of those cities.
I just want to say for the record before those judge me, and I know it's coming, I'm a complex sports fan. That's how I'll characterize myself. A very complex sports fan.
And to top it off, you're from Bakersfield.
Yeah, that might just say a whole lot about why that's we're devoid of any of those sports in my immediate market. So I really, really had to reach out.
The best of the Chain Crew.
What translates is what gets taught. And in a tackle environment, you know, I don't know about, you know, everyone, but we're practicing three days a week in season for 2 hours, and then we're playing a game on Saturday or Sunday. In camp, we're going, you know, 5 days a week, 2 hours a day. I don't know any flag programs that do either of those things. Most flag programs, you show up a half hour before the game, you practice, you play your game, and you're gone. You get your banana, you get your, you know, your juice, your cupcake, and you walk off. It's a great experience. Don't get me wrong.
Wait a minute, Joe. You get cupcakes when you play flag football?
Cupcakes, cookies, brownies, you name it, man, right? It's you know, flags, choices are great. I'm all about choices. But what you know, to your question, do you know, along the point that Ron was making, what transfers is what gets taught. And there are elements of the tackle game that are never taught on a flag field. Doesn't happen. Furthermore, the level of instruction on a flag team versus a traditional tackle team, even for those skills that are transferable across both of the sports/games, even those skills, they're not taught as thoroughly as, I mean, you saw a picture on the, I don't know, it was a Twitter post of a, you know, flag teaches fundamentals and the kid's holding the football like it's a loaf of bread, right? That kid's clearly not getting taught the fundamentals. So I think it's a two-part answer. Personally, I think there are things on a tackle field that will never get taught on a flag field. And there are those things on a flag field that are not getting taught to the degree that they are on a tackle field.
I didn't know about the cupcake situation. I've never been able to ask or receive cupcakes, but I'm certainly going to look into that.
Are you into flag now?
It's the cupcake today.
I'm totally into flag now. If I get cupcakes
now
at the end of it,
on flag.
Come on.
I'm changing. I like to say flag is now a sport. Once you've added the cupcake element, I'm in.
Thanks for listening to another Chain Crew podcast powered by the California Youth Football Alliance. Make sure to follow them on Facebook and Twitter. Plus, stay in touch on their website, cayfa.org.